evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington.
And I'm Lucy Pony, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, December 1st, 2014. Western Equatoria State leads in the number of people living with HIV/AIDS in the country.
The most state with a higher prevalence, of course, is Western Equatoria. Western Equatoria is 6.8%, almost closing to 7%.
And people living with HIV/AIDS say far needs to be done in the country.
All other fundings have been diverted to emergencies, everything. And it is targeting only three states. The rest are busy multiplying.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus.
Today is World AIDS Day. In the 35 years of the pandemic, about 80 million people have become infected with HIV and nearly 40 million have died. But great progress has been made in recent years in preventing and treating the disease. We have several reports for you today about people infected with HIV in South Sudan and around the world. We begin with a report about UNAIDS. The Joint United Nations Programme on HIV/AIDS has set a goal of ending the pandemic by 2030. An advocacy group says a strategic plan and much funding are needed to achieve that goal. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
In a videotaped message for World AIDS Day, UNAIDS Executive Director Michelle Sidibe asked people to reflect on the lives lost to Ebola.
Ebola reminded us what we were going through at the beginning of the fight against HIV. People were hiding themselves. They were scared. Stigma, discrimination. We were not having any hope.
Sidibe says that thanks to global solidarity, social mobilization, and civil society activism, tragedy has been turned into opportunity. He says the lives of millions of people infected with HIV have been saved due to greater access to antiretroviral drugs. UNAIDS has what it calls a fast-track strategy to end the epidemic by 2030. The first phase sets targets for the year 2020, known as 90-90-90. Mitchell Warren is executive director of the HIV advocacy group, AVAC.
Coming out of the AIDS conference this year in Melbourne, Australia, UNAIDS talked about this goal of getting 90% of people who are infected with HIV to know their status, 90% of them to get on treatment, and 90% of those on treatment to be what we call virologically suppressed, that the antiretroviral drugs would suppress the virus.
Research shows the more HIV is suppressed in the body, the less likely a person is to infect someone else.
That's really great news, but if you do the math, going from 90-90-90, it works out to about 73% of people who are infected would need to be virologically suppressed. But keep in mind that even in the United States right now, less than 30% of people who are infected are virologically suppressed. So there's a huge amount of effort to translate this kind of rhetoric, this good idea of 90-90-90 into practice.
Warren says treatment alone won't be enough to make 90-90-90 a reality.
One of the points that AVAC brings up in our AVAC report is called HIV prevention on the line. Because to get us truly to zero new infections in the long term, which is the ultimate goal, is going to require prevention. So to get on that line to zero, we need HIV prevention. But that title also carries a double meaning, because right now, given all of this focus on 90-90-90, we believe that HIV prevention is actually in jeopardy.
The AVAC leader says prevention should be given greater emphasis in the UNAIDS strategy.
We need to be sure that we have very clear targets and resources and programs that keep prevention high on the priority along with treatment so that we actually can think about ending this epidemic.
Warren says ambitious plans like 90-90-90 can cost a lot of money.
Unfortunately, the funding is not there, and I think that's probably the most important reality check here at World AIDS Day. So we are at real risk of setting targets that aren't resourced, and therefore those targets could be unmet simply by the incredible resource gap at the global level. So we have these amazing opportunities to have impact on the epidemic, but it doesn't come for free.
Warren says knowledge gained during the HIV/AIDS epidemic can be applied to West Africa's Ebola crisis. Both diseases have bred fear and discrimination.
Having a clear human rights-based response is just as important as having a good public health response. And that's lesson number one. Lesson number two is that while we do all the important work of caring and treating for people, having a research agenda is critical. And the third important lesson, I think, that draws a connection between HIV and Ebola is that strong public health systems are critical for any infectious disease.
Nigerian health officials say a big reason it quickly ended its Ebola outbreak was the health infrastructure that had been set up to deal with polio and HIV. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Women make up the vast majority of people living with HIV and AIDS in South Sudan. I spoke earlier today with Evelyn Letio, the chairwoman of the National Empowerment of Positive Women United in South Sudan. She says women who have publicly acknowledged that they have HIV or AIDS face discrimination on a number of levels.
There is discrimination right from the family in the community. And the government too, the women contribute 3/4 of the population, the number of the people living with HIV, they are widows, most are illiterate, they have no chances of education, they didn't have education, so they cannot be employed. The few who are employed are even sent off from jobs because they have declared that they are HIV positive.
Letio says men take medication even without telling their wives. She says there is also hidden inequality in the way South Sudan society at large treats women and men infected with HIV.
When a woman is positive, the court grants divorce immediately and the woman is ordered without speaking anything. Even when she contributed to build that home, she's ordered to leave and has no voice. Without testing the man, without saying no, this should be proof first, she's ordered immediately. And if it is the man, the man is HIV positive, the woman is negative. In a family, the woman is forced, even by the law, to stay and look after the man. This is the inequalities we have as women living with HIV.
As a national support group for women living with the virus, the National Empowerment of Positive Women United in South Sudan encourages HIV-positive women to accept their status and adopt a healthy lifestyle, which includes taking medication for HIV. Letio says the group runs support networks to allow women HIV sufferers to share experiences and support each other. She says the group she chairs has also set up partnerships with other organizations that support people living with HIV and AIDS and encourage them to start a business so that they can earn a decent living. Lately, though, support for HIV-positive women has been diminishing, she says. She says that is sending the wrong message to South Sudanese.
All other fundings have been diverted to emergencies. Everything. And it is targeting only 3 states. The rest are busy multiplying, supplying the HIV because they believe now they are not hearing anything about HIV. They believe that HIV has died.
Letio, a mother of 4, has been living with the virus for over 24 years now, since her husband died in 1989. He left her with 2 children and she adopted 2 others. She says she has had to accept her fate and live a full life because she has to take care of her children.
It's the acceptance within one and the will to live within one that makes somebody keeps going. And then the more I come and talk about HIV, the more I encourage people. I see broken family because of the support, the encouragement, counseling I give. They come back together, they live happily, gives me a lot of contentment.
Letio says the government, civil society and the international community all need to chip in and financially empower HIV-positive women and provide homes for HIV/AIDS orphans in South Sudan. And what better day to pass that message than on World AIDS Day?
And we move from South Sudan to South Africa. South Africa joins the rest of the world in commemorating World AIDS Day. Experts say women below the age of 25 in the country have a high HIV infection rate, and studies show they are getting the virus from older men. Tuso Khumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Lolo Brigitte Tsupa, 30, is a young South African woman who learned she is HIV positive at the age of 23. She says her craving for a fast and high-flying life led her to look for a man who could provide that for her. But Tsupa says she got more than that.
I met this man who had money, drove nice cars, and the man was very old enough to be my father. He would buy me things, my gifts, and he would take me out. That's the life I wanted to live, and I didn't have that at home. Anyways, that's where I got the virus from.
Tsupa's story is similar to that of 28-year-old Brenda Masango. Masango says she discovered she is HIV positive in 2007 while still a student at the University of Tshwane. She says it all started when her parents cut down their financial support to punish her bad behavior.
I had to buy clothes for myself. I had to see what I eat at school. So I dated a bigger person to me, like a man. So it came where he says to me, I'm giving you money and I give you a lot of money. So I ended up having sex with that guy, not using a condom. So I think that's where I contracted HIV.
Experts say 6.4 million people out of South Africa's 50 million population are HIV positive. They say HIV prevalence in young women is rising at a faster rate than in young men in the same age group. Females between the age of 15 to 24 years are four times more likely to contract HIV than their male counterparts. The infection rate amongst females 15 to 19 years is 5.6%. The gap grows even wider in the 20 to 24 years category. Studies show women in this group become HIV positive 5 years earlier than their male counterparts. In the 20 to 24-year group, the infection rate amongst males is 5.1% compared to 17.4% for women. Dr. Farid Abdullah, the chief executive officer of the South African National AIDS Council, says this statistics is worrying.
About one quarter of all new infections is in young women between the ages of 15 and 24. And we believe that they are being infected by older men in exchange for gifts, for clothing, what we call transactional sex, because older men have a higher accumulated risk of HIV.
Abdullah says South Africa needs multiple programs to deal with intergenerational sex, including poverty alleviation programs and sex education campaigns directed at young girls. Poshia Serote is the national coordinator at the Treatment Action Campaign, a Johannesburg-based HIV and AIDS advocacy organization. She says the government policy that allows girls as young as 12 to have sex, use contraceptives, and abort unwanted pregnancies without the consent of their parents is to blame for the high level of HIV infection among young girls.
It's more like we are setting them for failure to be HIV positive. And once they are HIV positive, it becomes a mess. Because she's pregnant, two, she's young. That is setting for a failure. We push them to have sex, but we are not giving them a space to practice the responsibility to the rights that we're giving them.
Experts also agree that it is not all gloom and doom for South Africa. The country has the largest antiretroviral treatment rollout in the world and has drastically reduced mother-to-child HIV infection rate from 8% in 2008 to around 2%. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
This is a public service announcement from VOA Africa. U.S. President Barack Obama addressing the Ebola crisis.
Ebola is actually a difficult disease to catch. It's not transmitted through the air like the flu. You cannot get it from just riding on a plane or a bus. The only way that a person can contract the disease is by coming into direct contact with the bodily fluids of somebody who is already showing symptoms. We know how to fight this disease. We know the protocols. And we know that when they're followed, they work. And if we take the steps that are necessary, if we're guided by the science, the facts, not fear, then I'm absolutely confident that we can prevent a serious outbreak here in the United States, and we can continue to lead the world in this urgent effort.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a closer look at the HIV/AIDS situation in South Sudan. That story after this.
South Sudan in Focus listeners can find us on the following shortwave frequencies: 11900, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
would you welcome an unexpected visitor?
I would welcome an unexpected visitor into our culture, because we expect to receive a visitor each and every minute at our home. So according to our culture, I will welcome him or her.
Yes, I would welcome them, even though there are factors that would determine if I have to welcome them just because of their approach.
I would not welcome one, simply because people have different missions which take them to other places. Actually, I learned a lesson one time back, because I welcomed someone at home and the person just turned to the negative side and did something negative. So I no longer want to welcome visitors.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Right now, there is a candlelight vigil going on at Juba Teaching Hospital to mark the World AIDS Day. The head of South Sudan's HIV/AIDS Commission says her office has been struggling with chronic funding problems. Dr. Esterina Novillo says the commission needs more money to fight the spread of HIV/AIDS, which she says affects 2.6% of South Sudanese population. Novillo says her office needs outside help in order to render services to people living with the disease.
We need 271 million. Out of that, whatever our budget from the government will not cover all the needs for HIV. We are trying also to mobilize from the international community, but we do also appreciate the effort of the U.S. government in supporting the HIV response in South Sudan through the PEPFAR support.
Your 2012 report, you told me that the prevalence was at 2.6. Which state is the most hit by the HIV disease in South Sudan?
The most state with a higher prevalence, of course, is Western Equatoria. Western Equatoria is 6.8%, almost closing to 7%, followed by Eastern Equatoria, which is 3.1%, and the third state is Central Equatoria, 3.1%, and followed by Gambia, 2.9%. But of course, that one with a reason, because those are the states bordering the countries with a prevalence. When you look at the DRC, Uganda, Kenya, as well as Ethiopia.
Given the fact that you are still appealing to the international community and other donors to help you fight HIV in South Sudan, do you have enough manpower to do this job?
When you look at the capacity of human capacity in South Sudan, there is some improvement. It's not like when we started in 2006. At least we do have South Sudanese who are capable of doing the work, and especially if we supported them with training, capacity building, I'm sure they will be able. In terms of structure, after the CPA, there was nothing existing as a structure in South Sudan. And I do remember very well when the commission was established, we have had only three hospitals: Juba Teaching Hospital, Wau Teaching Hospital, and Manakal Teaching Hospital, with only three VCTs and three treatment sites. But as of now, we do have quite a number of health centers and health units.
Let us talk about the community response. I've heard that in South Sudan, there's a lot of resistance to some preventive measures. For instance, the use of condom. We understand that it's a big issue in South Sudan. Can you talk to us a little bit about how the community is responding to your messages about how they can prevent and protect themselves from getting the disease?
We do some outreaches to the communities and explain to them about the preventive measures, not only the condom, but all aspects of preventive measures. To tell the truth, the condom is still at the rural area, has not yet reached quite a number, a bigger population. But in towns, yes, we use the condom, and there is a high demand for the use of condom.
A lot of politicians have come in previous occasions commemorating World AIDS Day, and they say the government is in the forefront in the fight against HIV in South Sudan. Do you agree with that statement?
Yes, I do agree. Because given the fact that the HIV Commission is put under the office of the president, this is an indication that it has been taken by the government as a priority. Since the establishment of the commission, we started with a humble budget, but every year the government do increase the budget for HIV.
People who are living with HIV/AIDS in South Sudan tell us that the government only talks about AIDS on World AIDS Day. The rest of the days, they don't talk about it, and they are saying they really need support. People are not reaching out to them. How do you react to that statement?
We are trying with our leaders, especially the members of the parliament, and every year we carry workshops so that at least to educate them about the HIV. And those are the people we do believe that we'll be able to infiltrate their constituency with the messages of prevention and the other aspects of HIV.
That's Dr. Esterina Novello, the head of South Sudan's HIV/AIDS Commission. She was speaking with me earlier today from Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Lucy. Islamic State militants killed at least 16 Iraqi border guards in a dawn assault today on a remote outpost near the Syrian frontier. At least four other guards were wounded in the attack on their headquarters at Al-Walid in the westernmost part of Anbar province. It was not immediately clear how many Islamic State fighters were killed or wounded. Suspected Islamic extremists attacked two northeastern Nigerian state capitals today, targeting a crowded market and police facility. Witnesses in Maiduguri in Borno State say two explosions ripped through a crowded market where two female suicide bombers killed dozens a week ago. It was not immediately clear how many people were killed or wounded in that incident. And finally, U.S. President Barack Obama is set to discuss the situation in Ferguson, Missouri, with his cabinet, civil rights leaders, law enforcement officials, and others at the White House. Today's meeting will focus on a review of federal programs that provide military-style equipment to law enforcement agencies. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Still on stories about HIV/AIDS, just a decade ago, South Africa was a grim place for AIDS sufferers, and worst for pregnant women, who had no access to drugs that would prevent them from giving the life-threatening virus to their babies. That changed when a group of South African patients stepped forward and sued for access to cheaper drugs. VOA's Anita Paul spoke with one of the activists in Johannesburg on World AIDS Day.
Hazel Tao says she remembers the dark days of HIV in South Africa, the nation with the world's highest burden of the disease. But the 45-year-old is not talking about the now distant year of 1991 when she was first diagnosed with HIV. She is talking about her decision in 2002 to reveal her status to the entire country by suing in South African court for access to cheaper AIDS drugs, which were then behind a high wall of patent protection. At the time, she was working as an HIV counselor and spending more than one-fifth of her pay on medication. In winning that landmark case, she became the mother of a cause, and the results have been living and breathing HIV-free babies. Her fight to bring down drug prices also enabled widespread availability of preventative medicines for pregnant HIV-positive women. Today, transmission rates between mothers and children hover below 3% in South Africa. And for that, this World AIDS Day, more than two decades after her diagnosis, Tao says she is thankful that she and about 2.5 million South Africans have access to free AIDS medicine.
Things are much, much, much better. Pregnant women access treatment to prevent their unborn baby. For people tested positive, treatment is accessible, and there are different regimens of treatment.
Doctors Without Borders head HIV-TB coordinator for Southern Africa, Eric Gomar, says much has changed since he arrived in South Africa in 1999.
While everybody speaks about reducing incidence, reducing new infection, it's extremely difficult to do with sexual transmission. But in this case, mother-to-child transmission, actually it's an easy-to-do intervention. When I arrived here, we had something like 20-22% transmission, meaning one mother upon five would give birth to an HIV-positive child. And it has been reduced now to 2.7% nationwide. So it's one-tenth of this. Still too many. It shouldn't exist anymore. That's something, it's an easy intervention to do. It's something that should be eradicated, like it has almost been eradicated in the Western world.
Dr. Gomar and Tao say the fight now is to extend antenatal treatment to all women in South Africa and bring the mother-to-child transmission rate down even further. Many women in poor and rural communities do not receive antiretroviral treatment in time to prevent their babies from contracting HIV. And so to this day, thousands of South Africans are born with this chronic disease. Tao says she would sue all over again. She says she has 24 compelling reasons to do so.
It's where now I'm an activist, and I'm a working class, and I'm a breadwinner. I've got a mother, I've got siblings, 23 siblings. I'm looking after them.
But her legal victory came too late for her. Tao never became a mother. Her husband packed up and left shortly after learning of her status, and her diagnosis came during the grim days when AIDS patients were advised to not procreate at all. But this World AIDS Day, millions of HIV-free babies in South Africa owe their health to the fruits of her labor. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that's our show for this Monday. We leave you with a song, Maratabet, by Amy J.
Everything you know, baby, 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 mom. Tell me about in other super style. Of course, talking about Maratabet.
Maratabet, oh, oh.
We've been listening to Emmy J and the song Maratabet. I'm Lucy Pony in Washington.
And I'm John Tanza, also in Washington. Thank you for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.